Hi everyone, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
G'day folks.
And Luke Henderson. Hello. We've got a great show lined up for you this week, all about a once obscure Nintendo classic finally getting a localized release decades later, a discussion on Switch sales, but first, let's kick off with the industry analyst Michael Pachter saying Nintendo should ditch the Switch. Sort of. So over the weekend, there was a big story that kind of blew up and took Twitter by storm amongst the Nintendo slash gaming circles about Michael Pachter suggesting that Nintendo should, quote, get rid of the docking station, get rid of playing on the TV, end quote, and instead sell only a handheld version of the system, basically the Switch Lite. And he also suggested that if people wanted to have a big screen option, they could Nintendo could offer something like a casting device, kind of like, you know, Amazon's Fire Stick or Google Chrome or something. That's not Google Chrome. What's it called?
Chromecast.
That's it. Google Chromecast. Something like that. So you can just cast your device to the TV and play that way, which in a sense sort of makes a bit of sense. Guys, how do we feel about this one? I know there's been quite a few opinions in the Discord and even in the Vook Slack.
Oh boy. So this is one of those things where it's like, I don't know if Pachter genuinely believes this or if he's just trying to get attention. There's sort of like a long history of analysts, much like him, saying outlandish things about the Switch to you know, get eyes on their stuff. I don't know. I think it's a ridiculous concept to get rid of, you know, the one thing that makes the Switch what it is. Like, as we know from, like, Nintendo's own, like, statistics, like, people are playing, you know, in docked mode. I mean, I use docked mode every day, but, like, I'm a bit of an outlier because I have to for Vook's coverage. But, I mean, I have a Switch Lite. I have my main Switch. I mean, I'm perfectly happy with both of those devices, but, like, if I had to choose one, it would definitely just be the dockable Switch. It's just so much more versatile.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I'm much the same way in that. I play a lot of handheld, not for the past 6 months because I've been locked inside. But whenever I'm traveling to or from Melbourne, my Switch is with me and I'm playing in handheld. But when I get home, I dock it and I get comfy and I relax into my game. And in all honesty, if we're getting rid of the one thing that makes a Switch, and being that you're able to, you know, play it how you want, was no longer a Switch. It's, you know, a handheld. It's now the Game Boy Advance Squared or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little indifferent to the suggestion. I mean, a lot of people tend to rain fire on Michael Pachter's opinions and things like that. But, like, at the end of the day, like, he is an analyst. I think he's more just commenting on just ways that the industry could shake things up a bit more. Which is probably the reason why a lot of people seem to get fired up over it, because it does sort of, you know, break the norm of what's already happening. And it seems kind of radical that Nintendo get rid of their home console and focus only on a handheld. But in a sense, I can sort of see what he's saying there, especially when you think about the fact that Nintendo doesn't have a dedicated console or dedicated home console or dedicated handheld console like they have had since they first entered the gaming market, really. And the idea of having a casting device instead kind of frees things up a little bit, I think. It means that you wouldn't have to have like an actual dock to then connect to a TV. You could just connect to a TV like you would with your phone. You could do it, you know, on the fly. You wouldn't, if you don't have a dock, for example, you can't connect to a TV. But if you have something like a Fire Stick or a Chromecast, then you can just connect to it any which way. Like, it's so much more simpler and things. So I can sort of see both ways with how it would benefit Nintendo. But the reason why I wanted to bring this conversation up is because I wanted to go a little bit into the Nintendo sales figures at the moment. So if we think about it, like I mentioned before, Nintendo has always had like two main pillars to their financial strategy. They've always had the handheld market and a home console market since the 80s. And since 2017, those two markets have basically been consolidated, and definitely so with the 3DS you know, being killed, effectively killed at this point. So now if we look at the Switch sales figures, we've got 65 million units worldwide current. Like, that's the current figure for Nintendo Switch consoles, and that's in 3.5 years. Switch Lite has sold just under about a 9 million as of June 2020. So I'm not sure if that's actually, if the 65 million units is combined with the Switch Lite sales. So if we want to be like, you know, generous with the figures, we could say that, you know, that's 75 million or 74 million all up. Okay, we can just be generous with that. Going by comparison of that same amount of time, 3.5 years, the Wii had sold over 52 million and the DS at the, in that same time period had sold 77 million. That's a combined 129 million units sold in the same time period compared to what the Switch has currently with about, you know, roughly 74 million. So that's like a 50 million unit difference, which is huge. Like, that's a lot of money that's kind of missing from what Nintendo could be doing. So while the Switch has, like, you know, been a wild success, it is only roughly half of what they could have sold or what they did sell back in the mid-2000s. I know we're comparing apples and oranges, but it's just an interesting thing that I just wanted to bring up there. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on it.
I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's like, we can't really say that, like, you know, they're leaving money on the table in this situation because, like, you know, the Nintendo DS and the Wii itself were both considerably cheaper than the Switch. So, like, in paying more for the Switch, you're kind of getting both devices anyway. And I would imagine that there's a pretty considerable overlap between people who got a DS and people who had a Wii, just because, like, both of those were pretty significantly intertwined, I would say. They had a lot of the same audience. Particularly like that sort of.
I don't know if I agree with that, but
I just mean, like, it's sort of like that. It's the family console, right? And, like, when you don't have the TV available, then you're gonna have, like, the family handheld as well. And you know, when the DS was competing with the PSP, the DS was considered, you know, the family friendly option. So I just think, like, from a regular person sales point of view, you know, the DS and the Wii had a lot of overlap, and I sort of think that that's sort of where the Switch is kind of encapsulating both markets, in that they don't need to have both devices anymore because it's all in one.
I sort of see what you're saying there, but at the same time, a lot of people had two DSs. The original DS and the DS Lite and potentially even the DSi, but that wasn't out within this same sort of 3.5 year time period, I think. It might have just been on the cusp of that. So people already had multiple consoles, and the Wii was just consistently sold out for years and years and years. Like, you just couldn't get those kinds of things. You had to, like, pre-order them, or you had people going out and buying multiple and then giving them, you know, palming them off to family and friends and things like that. And the Switch can be a shared console as well. While it can be a, you know, a lot of people give it themselves, like, you know, if you're in a family and you've got a couple of kids, like, you're probably not going to buy a one Switch per kid. You're just going to have it shared. So, you know, in terms of, like, attach rates to households, like, it might only be, we don't really know at the moment, could just be like one, or maybe like 1.2 Switches per house or something like that, rather than something like a cheaper DS, which could go for like $150 to $200, which you could potentially buy for, like, you know, one or two kids within a household and have a Wii. So I don't know. I just think it's interesting that the kind of dynamic that's happening between, you know, about 10 years later, and the numbers seem to be wildly different comparing them. And these days we're considering, you know, the Switch to be this, like, crazy enormous success and stuff, but it's still nowhere near as big as what the Wii and DS were 10 years ago.
But the big difference, though.
Yeah, go ahead, Link.
So the big difference is that now mobile phones are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, my nieces and nephews, whenever they come to visit, the first thing they, you know, they say is, hi, can we play your iPad? They don't say, can we play your Switch or can we play your Wii? You know, they go straight for the iPad. And that's the other thing too now, is because everyone's got a gaming device in their pocket, be it a Switch in their bag or a DS that they're keeping around because they've got so many games on it, or their mobile phone. Because so many people are focusing on that, which is Nintendo doing it as well now, they're making mobile games. They're covering that base already. And the other thing too is you mentioned before about, you know, they're leaving money on the table with you know, not having a dedicated handheld line. Well, they're not, because they're also no longer making games for it. So instead of having, you know, 15 teams a year developing games for two different platforms, those 15 teams are making for one platform. So they're, you know, they're keeping their costs in check that way, because they're not having to split resources across two development streams. And with Pachter, you know, saying things to shake the industry up, he doesn't say it for that. He says it because it gets attention on him. And that's his MO, and he's very, very successful at it.
But what is he, like, he's not making any sales or anything like that, so I don't know if I believe that either. Like, if he draws attention to himself, then, like, what the benefit does that do him or any analyst? Like, no, then they don't offer like a mainstream or consumer level product or anything like that. So I don't see what attention.
But he's not doing it to say, hey, look at me, I know what I'm talking about. He says these sort of outlandishy sort of statements to get attention. So when people come and ask him, what does he mean? It's the same way as, like, you know, when you see somebody with a billboard saying, you know, $199 for a brand new Ford Focus, like $200, and people go, hang on, what? You know, so you go and ask them what they're on about, and all of a sudden you're in their little environment where they can spruik now whatever they want. Pact has been very, very good on some of his observations over the years, but a lot of the ones he says, they're just outlandish claims. They're the same sort of thing where if anyone within the industry who made games said them, we'd have ignored them years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the thing is, right, like, at the end of the day, they're analysts, so they're, you know, people I don't want to be like too disrespectful to the field, because like financial analysis is like quite a difficult and well-respected field, but like at the end of the day, it's a bunch of guys sitting at the top of ivory towers like making predictions based off imaginary numbers. Like, there was an analyst, I can't remember who it was, but there was an analyst that was like getting some attention on Twitter for, you know, predicting that Sony's PS5 was going to sell, you know, 200 million units in like the first 2 years. And I was like, obviously that's not really possible in the slightest. Like, that's an insane amount. But like, it's the kind of thing that, like, at a surface level, a lot of these analysts can come in with these predictions that make sense on paper, but aren't ever going to translate into the real world. And I don't think like Nintendo is really interested in giving up the TV play experience. I think it's one of those things where they know exactly what makes a good experience when played on a TV. So, like, you know, things like Super Mario Party, even though it was, you know, lacking in content, it's still one of those things where you can get together with friends and play a bit and have a good time. And it's the same with, you know, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. They know that that's like a couch game. And that has worked massively to their favor, because like nobody else really creates those kinds of games. And, you know, we see now that like the Mario Kart 8 port for Switch has like sold just insane amounts of numbers, like more than any other like console exclusive this generation.
I think it was like one out of every two Switch owners owns that
game. So it's a pretty gigantic amount. So I mean, that's kind of Nintendo's bread and butter ever since the Wii days. Like, it's all, you know, it's experiences that you can play with friends and family, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But, you know, like, I don't hate the idea of having, like, a Chromecast or Fire Stick, you know, device that you cast your screen to. I think that, like, that's an interesting idea. It's obviously not possible with, you know, the current technology in the Switch or the Switch Lite. But, like, for a future generation kind of thing, like, it's not the worst idea.
Well, I mean, you guys mentioned it, and there was a thing from Phil Spencer over the weekend or late last week as well, where somebody asked about would Xbox xCloud, you know, their cloud-based service, would they consider releasing a Amazon Fire Stick sort of device so people can just buy that and a controller, and then they can stream the games to a TV? And he said, you know, an Xbox-branded streaming stick is definitely a possibility. So it's not as if it's unheard of for people to look at this sort of technology and say, how can we use it? I just don't think it's Nintendo's focus, because let's face it, Nintendo and anything online or anything streaming, they tend to be really behind in anything regard.
That's true. But like, you also have to remember that like Nintendo pioneered this incredible video streaming tech for the Wii U. Like, that's something that is
basically, it's going to be my next point. Yeah,
that was something that was basically unheard of. And like, sure, it was 480p, so it's not really, you know, a great example of what you could do. But like that technology developed to have, you know, basically latency-free video transfer between something that's like on.
They also just like 2 weeks ago released a new device that does the exact same thing in Mario Kart.
That home
Mario Kart version.
Nintendo's definitely working on video streaming technology. They've worked with it in the past. They're working with it now. It is a possibility. It's just like there are a few things that like I would want to be sure of before investing in that kind of product. So for me, it would be, you know, obviously latency is the main one there. Unless it's like basically zero latency or, you know, the equivalent latency of whatever would be like having your dock plugged in, like I'm not really interested. I think the other one is sort of what the power cost is going to be, because like having it as, you know, this thing that you hold in your hand, if that's only going to last 3 hours before you have to go put it on charge, like for a lot of people, like being able to play it on charge while, you know, in the lounge room or whatever isn't really much of an option. So that's the other thing that I'd definitely consider before purchasing that kind of thing.
What if this whole hubbub with a Switch Pro supposedly coming out next year, you know, a 4K Switch Pro, all that stuff, what if Nintendo further threw a spanner in the works and, you know, they converged their markets, their handheld and home console markets with the Switch, and now they're going to splinter it back out by having only a Switch Lite and the Switch Pro is just a box that's connected to your TV only?
Well, that's something that like some people have brought up before. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I mean, it could. I wouldn't. Sissy, I think in order for that to happen, what I would like is for the Switch Lite to be dockable onto the Switch Pro to transfer your save files like immediately or access your save files through it.
We're going back to some Sega CD stuff now.
Yeah, exactly. but basically just like, you know, you can, you know, slap your Switch Lite into it and then like all your save files are on the Switch Pro, or, you know, vice versa. Because I think like really the beauty of the Switch is that, you know, you can just pick the Switch up out of the dock and continue playing. And I think anything that's like sort of compromises that at its core is probably not something worth pursuing. But again, like Nintendo is a wacky company that does whatever the hell they want. So who knows?
Maybe eventually they'll make it that way. They'll just have a dock that just has a billion ports to it and you just hook up every Switch imaginable into one giant, like, enormous Voltron Switch. And then that's the 4K Switch right there. It's just eight other Nintendo Switches all connected up together.
That could be how they do it. My last sort of thing with an analyst is, because I do a lot of it in my day job, I do a lot of data analysis, is being an analyst, it's not about predicting the best outcome for anything or predicting the most rewarding outcome. It's about taking multiple sets of data and trying to make sense of it in a way that appeals to people. So it's not about saying, you know, oh, if they do this, it's going to make them so much more money. No, it's about saying that if they do this, this could happen. And then you have to provide sort of evidence as to why that would be the case. And again, like Pact is very good at doing that sort of thing. He had a show when Game Trailers was actually a site, not just a YouTube channel. What was it called? Pack Attack? Something like that, yeah. And, you know, people would ask questions and he would deep dive into them. He'd do like one or two questions in an episode. He would deep dive into them. And some of his insights are actually really good, but he just makes the outlandish claims every now and again. So whenever you see an analyst, you have to remember that they're taking multiple sets of data that may not make sense to anybody until they connect point A from one to point, you know, T from another. And then they go, okay, well, if these two line up, that means everything else down the line lines up, you know, in this train of thought. So anytime someone talks about data analysis, it's an interpretation of data. It's the same way that a reviewer, you know, that's their opinion of the game. It's not the gospel of that game. It's just their opinion of it. So anytime you see an analyst, just, you know, big grain of salt with that thing, because you never know what data they're looking at to come up with that conclusion.
To finish things off with this discussion, Nintendo Life actually has a really interesting poll that I wanted to bring up. With 16,915 votes, they had a range of options split among percentages of how much you might play your Switch handheld or docked. So their highest voted option was 90% docked, 10% handheld, and that was 18% of voters selected that one. So almost a fifth of people, a fifth of 16,000 or almost 17,000 people who voted selected that one. 100% docked, though, was only 8%. And people who only have a Switch Lite was down to 4%. So there's quite a wide margin there. But the other options there, you know, 50%, 50%, either way, 60-40, like, you know, it's pretty well split. So not a particularly high scoring set of data there, but interesting to look at, though, that it's pretty well spread, you know, between people just shuffling between handheld and docked mode. So I don't think Nintendo will be favoring one way or the other anytime soon by the looks of things.
No, the Switch Lite is too successful for them to just abandon its core reason for existing.
Mm. All right, moving on. Let's turn our attention to Fire Emblem. Not Three Houses, not Fates, not any of the recent ones. We're talking about Fire Emblem, the original from 1990, the one that was only released in Japan. So Fire Emblem for the Famicom, the entire series actually was only released in Japan up until, like, you know, 2003, when Fire Emblem, the Blazing Blade, was finally brought to the West on the Game Boy Advance. But before then, you know, the West hadn't really played any of these games. And it was kind of weird seeing these characters from this really obscure Japanese game popping up in something like Smash Brothers. But then, you know, Marth and Roy became the most popular, some of the most popular characters in Smash Melee on the GameCube at the time. But since then, the series has steadily grown and more popular. And Fire Emblem Three Houses last year was actually a really, really popular game amongst a lot of anime fans and things like that, and strategy fans. But now we're finally getting the original Fire Emblem completely localized in English, coming to Switch on December 4th for $9 on the eShop, with also a limited physical run, which was available for pre-order at EB Games, but sold out pretty quickly, which is a shame because it actually looks kind of sweet. It had a really cool art book and things like that in there as well. This is sort of in time for the, you know, kind of scrapes by in time for the game's 30th anniversary, but, you know, I don't know if anyone was really holding out for that kind of thing. But the game, interestingly enough, will have quick saving and reloading and rewind and fast forward features, much like, you know, your typical kind of emulated experience that you would expect on something like the Switch's SNES and NES apps. But I do want to also stress that this is another timed release, which then goes off the shelves on March 31st next year. So that's something we're going to circle back to later on. But guys, how do we feel about this one finally coming out? Is this a Fire Emblem game that you have been holding out for?
I mean, patrolly, no. I don't hate Fire Emblem. I think it's a great little series. It's not specifically my thing. But, you know, I've played a bit of Awakening. I've played a bit of Three Houses and generally enjoyed myself with both of those things. I don't know. I think, like, was anybody really asking for this?
That's why I think it's interesting that people are like, oh, you know, game's 30th anniversary. It's like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, this game, like, we can say, like, you know, this is the first time it's ever, you know, released in the West, and, like, that's kind of true. But, like, also they did remake it for the DS, and I think it was like 2007 or 2008.
Oh, I missed
so
that.
It's like. So it's like, it's not like this story hasn't been told in the West. Like, this is something that, you know, is available, like, maybe not, you know, easily available to play, but it's something that, you know, people have played before.
I still laugh that the trailer that Nintendo released, you know, they made fun of the fact that the game hadn't been released when they were showing Smash Brothers footage, and then in the press release it says that it is now officially available in English.
Yeah,
because, you know, the game got fan translations for years because people wanted to play this game. So I just thought that was interesting that Nintendo themselves were sort of poking fun at the fact that this game hadn't made the jump before in its original format.
Well, yeah. When are they going to turn their attentions and finally release an officially English version of Mother 3?
Well, I mean, like, sort of anything's on the table now, right? Is it like this is like the first time they've done this?
I'm sure that will be a limited run as well. That's really going to make people mad too.
The Mother 3 English Egyptian will come out the same time that Pacta's Switch streaming console does.
But like, just on the price, like, it's $9, which, like, you know, I can't
that's a really good price
with that. Like, it's a pretty good price. Is a little bit dampened by the fact that it's free on the Japanese Nintendo Switch Online app. So they've already got this and it's already available there. But like, I think it's really interesting that it is coming as sort of a standalone release, because I was always under the impression that like, it's not an easy thing to sort of translate it in the way that they've translated it. They can't just like, you know, edit the ROM. It's not something that you can just easily do. So the fact that they've got this makes me think that they're probably using technology similar to what they did in the Super Mario 3D All-Stars release, where it's sort of like running the game in an emulator, but like running live translation scripts on everything as it goes. Because that was something that like sort of Nintendo had done in the Super Mario 3D All-Stars port, in that like there was a lot of stuff that was sort of like inserted after the fact in real time, using their special scripting language in the emulator. So like, I think that's probably what's going on here, and I think that's probably why it's not just like, you know, translated and shoved into the NES app. But yeah, for $9, like, you can't really complain. It's about the price that an NES game would go on the old virtual console. So
I was just gonna make a point to your statement there about why it's not included in that. I'm thinking maybe they thought they would, you know, be a premier access sort of thing for the Switch
the
Online,
Disney Plus strategy.
And then they saw how well Mulan went for Disney Plus, and they went, no, we ain't want no part of that.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, the biggest concern with it is the timed release, because God, Nintendo's got to stop doing this. I don't understand it.
This is what I wanted to bring up as well. So we've got, how many games do we have now that are or were supposed to be timed releases? Tetris 99 was one of them, right? And that came out early last year.
I think Tetris 99 was always supposed to continue running for basically forever.
Right. Okay.
And that was 2018 anyway. That was about a year.
Right. Okay. For some reason, I had in my head that was a timed release. And then we had the Jump Rope game, which is no longer timed. That's still on the store, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's still going. We've got Super Mario 35, which is you know, supposed to leave on the 31st as well.
Yep.
We've got Super Mario 3D All Stars. That's also leaving around the same time too. So there's this one magical date that Nintendo is releasing all their games, and
that's
cuts off at that date specifically. So I'm really curious to know what this plan is, what they're trying to do here. And now
it's because on the 31st of March, Nintendo will be shutting down. The company will be no more. 1st of April.
They'll
be non-tendo.
Pacta didn't see that one coming.
No.
See, my first thought here was like, it's a little cynical of me to say, but like, my first thought was like, you know, March 31st, that's the end of the financial year for Nintendo. Get as much sales in during that time using, you know, FOMO or fear of missing out, and you know, hope for fantastic numbers. Like, it's probably not that. It's probably just Nintendo being weird, as Nintendo does. But like, man, it's such a silly decision. Like, it's costing you absolute pennies to continue to host like this. What, it's going to be like less than a megabyte ROM, basically,
I think it was about 35 megabytes.
Really?
If the eShop listing is right, it's about 35.
All right, so 35 megabytes. Like, that's costing you nothing. Like, it's just insane to be like, yeah, here's 35 megabytes worth of data that you can just only download until, you know, March 31st. There's no reason for that. It's the same with 3D All-Stars, and it's the same with Super Mario 35. I mean, I could kind of understand it with Mario 35 because, you know, you have to, you know, keep the servers running and all of that stuff. But, like, even then, it's not going to cost that much money to do it. And it seems like a weird choice.
Well, like even something like Super Mario 35, like they're not running Destiny. Like it's not this huge like games as a service type thing. It's very minuscule amount of data, and you know it's only 35 people that you're playing against anyway, which is not, which wouldn't be too much of a strain. Yeah. So yeah. Sorry, Luke. Go on.
No, no. I was just going to say it's 34 people you're playing against.
Sorry,
you're the 35th.
But yeah, with like Super Mario 3D All Stars, you could say like, you know, it's taking up server space, and it's like, yeah, but like, what about all of the other Nintendo games that are taking up server space? Like, you know, Super Mario Odyssey wasn't taken down after 6 months because, you know, we want to free up some space on the server. That's not going to happen with any other game. So it's just.
Yeah, I don't buy any argument that says anything about server space because they've opened and operated an online store. Like that's just par for the course. Like that makes no sense to be shuffling games in and out of the service.
Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, from someone who's dealt with this before as well, spinning up extra storage on a server is, if you're doing it through cloud based, it is so freaking easy. It is ridiculous. And if you're doing it through physical, like actually inserting a hard drive, that doesn't cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
It does not cost so much money. It's you know. But my thing is like with these release dates is maybe it's the whole FOMO thing. Maybe they're like, no, we want to do it, you know, the other way to really force people to buy into it. But the fact that, you know, if it was just Mario 35 and 3D All-Stars that both had the 31st cutoff, maybe you'd say, oh, they're only doing it 6 month intervals. But this isn't 6 month interval. This is a 4 month thing. December through the end of March is just under 4 months. So maybe they're considering doing other things. Maybe they want to do limited releases for their older games to drive people towards their newer products. Get people on the old ones, say, hey, remember this game that came out 20 years ago, 30 years ago? You know, relive the memories of them. And now, you know, once you've done that, go to these new experiences. Maybe that's their sort of thinking.
It just seems like a very odd thing to do specifically with these more obscure titles. I mean, even Super Mario 3D All-Stars, what a name, with Sunshine and this newer Fire Emblem, or this older, newer Fire Emblem now as well. I mean, these games are super, super hard to get your hands on. Like one's locked to the GameCube, the other one was locked in Japan on the NES. So the fact that they're bringing these games out of, you know, storage and making them very limitedly available, I mean, it seems like a very odd choice. At least up front, they're saying that it's going to be available for a limited time. Like, who actually knows whether or not it will keep going over time?
The other thing, too, is as much as I hate the way that Disney have done this, for years and years, remember the Disney Vault, you know, The Little Mermaid would come out on VHS every, like, 3 years or DVD every 3 years. And, you know, there'd be an ad, you know, grab the Little Mermaid before it gets locked back in the vault. And you'd be like, okay, I mean, I've got to get it because otherwise I won't be able to buy it, you know. And it was always this big thing about, okay, it's only around for a limited time. Get your copy. It will come back again, but, you know, it may not be the same version. It might have extra features, might have this or that. And I think maybe Nintendo are trying that as a business model to boost sales numbers on things. I don't know. But maybe that's something that they're looking at is, how can they boost sales on products that maybe wouldn't get sales? Like, would I normally buy Fire Emblem? No, because I don't care for the series at all. It's not my thing. But if it's $9 and it's, you know, only around for a few months, maybe I'll pay the $9 and buy the game just because that way I have it if I want to play it. Whereas come April 1st, if I decide I want to have it and don't already own it, I'm out of luck. Maybe that's the
other thing that I've sort of seen suggested around the place, and it seems to be something that not really a lot of people are talking about, but some people have suggested that this is sort of a trial run to kind of gauge interest on returning to a more virtual console style service.
He said the magic words. Virtual console.
So it's a very real possibility. Like it's possible that like Nintendo is experimenting with like, you know, who would actually buy these things. I don't necessarily know if that's true. But
I mean, I wouldn't agree with that one purely because 3D All-Stars is in shops.
Well,
if it was just like a digital only release, then that would have some weight to it, that sort of argument. But because it's a retail release, it tends to discount it, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, but like we could just look at the retail release as like something special that they did for the 35th anniversary. So it's like we could be like, as people have suggested, that, you know, there'll be a virtual console app and then like each of the games that you want for it, instead of them, you know, clogging up the eShop, would be,
become like a game, you know, pass type of thing.
Subscribe to it, or a DLC that you like pay for individual titles.
I just had a thought, Ollie. You mentioned before about the live translation that Super Mario 3D All-Stars was doing, like the live asset replacement, stuff like that. That's NERD, right, that did that?
Yeah.
So for those that don't know, NERD is the Nintendo European Research and Development or Research Division. They're basically, they're nerds. They're nerds that work for Nerd. And their big thing is that they're the ones that have done all the sort of emulation for Nintendo Switch Online. So if you remember on the Wii U, the emulation for the virtual console games was not the best. The folks at Nerd were given the task of fixing it, and they've done a phenomenal job with the games that are available. I don't know how big the team is. That may explain why we only get three games every 3 months. But maybe that they started developing this technology for Fire, and they used Fire Emblem as their test case. And maybe that's why this game's popped up out of nowhere. Maybe, you know, they took an old game to see if it would work on something, you know, older than Nintendo 64. Maybe that's how this game came about, because they did have, or they were supposed to have in Japan, the Fire Emblem Expo 2. They had one last year. They're supposed to have another one this year. And it was sort of a celebration of all things Fire Emblem, you know, concerts and merchandise and all sorts of stuff. And it obviously got cancelled. And I can't imagine Nintendo sitting on this announcement for 6 months, because I think that was supposed to be in April. I can't imagine them sitting on this for 6 months for a virtual console release of a game. It just makes no sense. So maybe this was just something that somebody did at Nerd, and it just sort of spun out into its own thing. I don't know.
Just going back to the limited release thing, I just remembered, I'm thinking back to interviews with Reggie Fils-Aimé before the Switch came out, when Nintendo just had not said anything about what their plans were for online or anything like that. And I remember that he was saying something along the lines of that their online service was going to include games that were available for a limited time, for something like a month or something like that they would cycle through, and you would have the option to then purchase the game at a discounted rate before it left the service. So is obviously an original idea. Limited release is definitely something that they have kept in the back of their minds for many years now.
Yeah, so that was the original plan for what eventually became the Nintendo Switch Online SNES and NES snaps.
But they haven't removed any games from that service at all.
No, they changed their plan after sort of like a lot of backlash about like why does it need to be like that? It's certainly something that, you know, they could look into, like having these games sort of like cycle through in you know, 6 month lots or 4 month lots as we see with this one.
That's the other thing too. That's what Game Pass does. Game Pass puts a game on there for a couple of months. You know, if you buy it, you get a discount on it, and then after a while, it goes away and you can't play it anymore. But, you know, I don't think any games have actually come back to the service. But that's what Game Pass was doing. Exactly what Reggie was sort of saying. What you were saying, Angelo, is that, you know, that only ran for a limited time. Well, maybe this is Nintendo's way of testing about. Maybe that could be their new way of going forward with some of their old games.
Yeah, but Netflix also does something. All the streaming services do something similar. But the difference with that, though, I think, is that you're well aware of the fact that you are basically renting those games. You're paying to subscribe to a service, and you have access to those games for a certain amount of time. And, you know, a good chunk of those games stay on the service, like a lot of Microsoft's first-party games stay there, but then other publishers cycle through and things like that. So there's already that kind of expectation to do it, whereas Nintendo, like, this is their own game, so it doesn't make any sense for them to be removing it from their own service. But yeah, just some very quick final thoughts that I want to get from you guys. Do you think that we will get any more limited release announcements between now and 31st of March 2021? Are there any other games that are going to get announced that will get removed by that date?
The original Kirby.
I could definitely see it happening. Nintendo doesn't really talk a lot, this year at least they haven't really talked a lot about their plans going forward, and we just sort of get these things like randomly announced on Twitter, or in this case, you know, leaked the night before on Nintendo Korea's website. So, you know, I could definitely see it happening. Hopefully it's more, you know, in the next couple months rather than, you know, March 1st, we get a game that goes away on March 31st, because that would just be really frustrating and stupid.
What about you, Luke?
I mentioned this a few episodes back about their 2 monthly cycle that they've been doing this year.
Yeah.
So they announced something and within 2 months it's out, and this fits that cycle. They announced it last week, like a week ago now or so, and it's out beginning of December. So it's just under 2 months. So, you know, if we don't hear anything by sort of mid-January, I don't think we're going to hear anything more. But I honestly expect there to be at least one more thing because, you know, we haven't got any sort of news about the first few months of next year yet. And Nintendo always like to have something in that January-February release window because it helps bolster their numbers as they come into the end of their fiscal year.
Well, we have something in the February slot on February 12th.
What's that?
3D World. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Yeah. January and March are just generally void right now. And I think we'll definitely see something then.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to getting the official announcement of Metroid Prime 4 coming out in early March and going away at the end of March. let's go into the games we're playing. So, who wants to go first?
I can, because I've only been playing one that I can talk about, and that's just the Doom Eternal, the Ancient Gods DLC.
Please, lay on me.
Oh, it is hard. Mm. It is hardcore. I'm what, fourth checkpoint in, and I'm getting owned. Like, I'm playing on normal difficulty because, you know, some of the extreme is a bit weird. But yeah, it's not like one of those DLCs where if you haven't played the game for 6 months, they give you a chance to warm back into it. No, this one just assumes you've just finished the main campaign and it drops you straight in to, you know, that insane level of doomness. It is full on from the first bullet you fire and it does not stop.
You're playing on PC?
I'm loving it, but it's challenging. Yeah, PC.
Nice. That's great.
I've been playing it on Switch, but Bethesda are being very coy about the Switch release in this game.
Yeah, what's happening over there? What about you, Ollie?
Well, the past few days I've been just completely taken in by the Crown Tundra DLC for Pokemon Shield, which released on Friday. And my goodness, it's so good. It's basically everything I've wanted from a Pokemon game my entire life. it's just such an evolution from like what the base game of Pokemon Sword and Shield were. You know, it has some amazing exploration, which, you know, the original game was severely lacking. It was basically just a straight route through the region. It has, you know, some mystery and some story thrown in and all sorts of wonderful, you know, like environmental riddles to solve and stuff like that. It's wonderful. Absolutely perfect. Also been playing Pikmin 3, which I can't really say much more about, but there is a review coming up before the game launches. And I think I'm allowed to say that.
When is that one out again?
The game's out on the 30th.
Yeah, so, ooh, so just a couple this, a few days Friday. Ago. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think embargo lifts Wednesday night from memory. Yep. Wednesday night.
And also, I've just been playing Box Boy and Box Girl because I never got around to that when it launched. And I was a massive fan of the three Box Boy games on 3DS and been really enjoying that.
Awesome. I've been playing some Baldur's Gate 3, which is just in early access at the moment on Steam, which I'm doing a piece for Luke's site, Maxi Geek. So that should be up this week. I've never played Baldur's Gate before. I've never really you know, I wasn't a PC guy growing up. You know, I did play some games on PC, but it was mostly just like the more popular, like Age of Empires types of games. So it's kind of cool to get into something that's very much, you know, D&D like, very hardcore kind of RPG type stuff. So it's been interesting doing that. My piece will be more of a preview rather than a review because the game is in early access. There are bugs ahoy in this version, but I think that kind of adds to the charm a little bit just to see some janky T-pose characters just floating around the place in the middle of a cutscene. It's always good fun. But yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. I'm only about 8 or 9 hours in and I'm still only in the second area because it's just so easy to just get lost and have to keep, you know, reloading save files because you accidentally get someone killed or something like that. So slow sailing, but I'm enjoying it so far. And I've also returned to Assassin's Creed Odyssey to try and finish up on the DLC, the Atlantis DLC, before Valhalla comes out in a couple of weeks. So I'm very, very keen to finally get that one over and done with. I just clocked 118 hours in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I just realized that I've been playing that game on and off for 2 years now. So I think I'm very ready to kind of just put it behind me.
I mean, on the upside, Valhalla is supposed to be quite a bit shorter, so...
Oh, you know, that's very good then. I may only be playing that for a year,
yeah.
Well, Valhalla was done by the Origins team.
Yeah.
And Odyssey was done by the Toronto team. So one was Montreal, one was Toronto. So this Valhalla is Montreal again. So
excellence. Yeah. Very good. I haven't seen too much about that game, but I'm still excited about it. I'm kind of like that with a lot of Assassin's Creed games. I don't really keep up to them in the lead up, but then I just kind of like just jump headfirst into them when they come out. So very excited.
Well, they've got officially licensed hoodies and shoes this time. So
oh, that's always good.
Yeah. But if you want more Greek monsters, gods and monsters, hang on, what's it called now?
Phoenix Immortals. Rising. Immortals Rising. Yeah. Phoenix Immortals. Something like that. Pick one.
Yep.
Very, very quickly, something that isn't in the show notes is just a quick revival of the eShop recommendations. We've pretty much done with this section. It kind of became redundant when we were just recommending the same games over and over again because they were the only ones on sale. But I do want to make mention that Ni No Kuni is currently on sale on the eShop by surprise. There's a huge surprise to all of us on the Vooks team yesterday. It's down to about $15 on the eShop, which I think is something like 83% off. So it's down from like $89. Down to $15. So someone like me, for example, who, you know, surprise, surprise, never played a Ni No Kuni game before, this is probably the best time to really jump in on it because, you know, it only just got released last year and it's the remaster of the original from 2011.
No. The Switch version is not the remaster. It's just a port of the original.
Sorry, it's the port. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah. No, Bandai were really tricky about their wording on that one.
Right.
They refused to say for so long if it was the remaster or not. So it caught a lot of people by surprise that it wasn't the remaster, but it's still a good game.
Yeah, and for $15, like a pretty hefty JRPG with the art of Studio Ghibli, like go for it. Sounds great.
Yeah.
But let's quickly I've played it on two different platforms previously and I still bought it when you put the link in and said that it only cost $15. So
yeah.
Absolutely get on it.
Let's quickly go into the Fortnite forecast. We've blasted through this episode so far. It's quite nice. Fortnite forecast. So between today and the 9th of November, which will roughly be the time that we record the next episode. So today being the 26th of October. On October 27, we have Ghost Runner still to come and Oddworld New and Tasty, which we mentioned in the last episode. And Pikmin 3 Deluxe as well is soon to come out. And you can look for Ollie's review on the site, Vooks.net, later on this week when the game is out. But on November 3rd, we've got Jurassic World Evolution, Bakugan, Champions of Vestroia? How do you pronounce that?
Vestroia. And that's that weird one, Nintendo. They did that treehouse thing.
Where everybody got like whatever the game was about it. And then it was just a Bakugan game.
it was the weirdest thing.
It was just a Bakugan game.
But it is way forward, the developers for this one.
Yeah, and
way
it forward looks really good.
Have a pretty good track record, so.
Here's a little fun fact about Bakugan for me. When Bakugan was a thing in like 2007, when it just like came on the TV, like, or it had been out for about a year or something like that, and I was at university and I had learned about it about a year after it started being a thing, that was the moment that I realized I was no longer a child because there was a fresh new anime with toys and stuff that kids were playing that I had no idea about and did not understand whatsoever. I felt so old at the ripe old age of 19. On November 6th, we have Descenders. And there's something interesting here written in brackets in the run sheet.
So let me just mention Descenders first. Descenders is the procedurally generated downhill biking game. Every time you jump on the bike, it'll be a different mountain path to try and or series of paths to navigate down. And it's all about getting to the bottom as fast as you can on, you know, paths with obstacles in the way that are different every single time you load into it. So it's going to be one of those sort of rinse and repeat games that I think will grab some people really well and other people might get a bit annoyed with it. There is a similar game at the moment called Lonely Mountain Downhill from Thunderfall. It's not procedurally generated, but it is a very similar concept. The big difference is Lonely Mountain, you're looking at the mountain, whereas with Descenders, you're looking down the mountain. So the other one that's in brackets there, I put it in there. So Need for Speed Hot Pursuit Remastered is out on the 6th for all the other platforms but Switch, just in case people saw that, you know, Need for Speed's out on the 6th. The Switch gets that a week later on the 13th. I just wanted to highlight that for that day.
Fair enough. No, that's cool. Yeah, so in that case, we'll probably have something to say about it or someone on the show who can say something about it next episode in that case. Now, just as a quick heads up before we wrap things up over here, this is episode 198, which means we are two episodes away from episode 200. So that one should roughly be around the end of November towards that time. We have a couple of things planned for that one. It will be a 20-year retrospect on the Vux site in general, because Vux.net just celebrated its 20th anniversary a couple of weeks ago. So we'll be bringing in some people who have contributed to the site over the years. And it being the 200th episode as well, do want to also look back on the Vukcast a little bit, considering that this show has been around since like 2006 or something like that. So very, very long time for both the podcast and the website. So do look forward to that in just under a month. But that about wraps up this week's Vukcast. Be sure to head to the site, www.vux.net, for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter at vux.net, all spelled out, or jump over to our Discord at it.ly/VuxDiscord. Ollie, where can people find you?
You can find me in said Discord or on Twitter at Chocobalt, Chocobalt.
Can you also give a quick heads up about your new video series?
Yeah, so we do have a new video series. It's called Book Club. It's a book club, but for games. Our first episode is out now and available on the Vux.net YouTube. And I think it's a fantastic first episode. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the series plays out and developing it further. We were originally planning on going bi-weekly on this, a slot in between the Vukcast, but it's just not viable. The amount of work and time and effort that goes into it just means that a monthly series is much more viable for us. So look forward to the next episode of that next month, because we have a pretty good theme for it, and I'm excited for people to see that.
Yeah. And Luke, where can people find you?
People can find me everywhere. I'm omnipresent these days. Mostly you can find me on pretty much everything at RenderMan7, so Twitter, Switch Online, Xbox, Steam, all that sort of stuff. Same thing everywhere.
Cool. You joke about being omnipresent, but with lockdown restrictions being lifted in Victoria, you will pretty much be able to be wherever you want, which is great. So congratulations on Victoria, by the way, for bringing down their coronavirus numbers.
Well, it was 0-0 today. Mm. 0 new cases, 0 deaths. First time since June.
That's fantastic.
Insane.
It's very, very exciting news for all of our friends over in Victoria. So congratulations and all the best to you guys getting out there and getting on the beers, as it is said now.
Yes.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mangello with a 0 at the end. And also on Twitch at Mangello Show. No zeros in that one. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight. Goodbye.